Yes, for now, that's only 5 members.
Oh, Kosoni has just joined. So, Antonio, how are you? Younger, Molo.
Good morning, Chair. Ninjani namhlanje?
Sikhona.
Okay, nathi siyaphila.
Okay, we'll talk offline. Let me get my ears. Womavilasa, can you get hold of Abraham? No, no more long so that we start. Honorable Womavilasa, she has also been kicked out. Zanen.
I'll do that, Chair.
I'll phone it more along, no? No, no, because you could take a shot. I think more along as
well. I'm here, Chair. I can hear so.
I'm also here.
I'm in the village,
Chair. Oh, we'll be able to hey, Mrolong. Ramlolong.
Mudlastilo.
I feel the broadband was ready. Hey, you're a part of
it. Oh, Cape Town.
Okay. Are you good for me? Because we have got a long meeting. We'll have our meeting now, and then we'll be joined by communication so that we can deal with that issue of the first bank. Hey, there's a problem here. Welcome, honorable members, to the meeting. Welcome officials from Parliament, Treasury, SARS, and other entities. Welcome the media. Welcome the public. Today's meeting is about Tileb and Talab. The meeting is officially opened. Are there apologies?
No apologies received, Chair.
No apologies. So, Alan, our colleagues from Treasure, from Communications, in the next meeting, they will join in this platform. Or there's another platform you have created.
No, Chair, it's the same platform. I've told my colleague from Communications that I'll send a message about 15 minutes or so before we're done, and then she'll tell the members to join then.
Okay, thanks. Okay, let's move to clause by clause and the consideration of the committee report on Tileb and Talab. Yanga or who else is going to lead today? So that we process these bills like we did yesterday. It's much faster that way.
Okay, it's Mr. Franz Tomasek on the Talab. And I think, according to the program, Talab is first today. Franz?
Thank you, Yanga, and thank you, Honourable Chair and members. Good morning, all. We have the Tax Administration Laws Amendment Bill to look at today. You may have received a letter yesterday about a small error that crept into it, which we picked up after it had been introduced, which I will get to shortly. But let's begin with the opening. So we have the objects, and if we scroll down, we have all the objects. What you will see highlighted there is, members will recall that there was a request that there not be a duplication of a penalty, because what we've done in this bill is we've proposed that the understatement penalty system apply in respect of overclaims or incorrect claims of the employment tax incentive. But the employment tax incentive has its own penalty provisions, and there was a concern about an overlap. That comment was accepted, and the necessary amendment was made in the draft legislation. Unfortunately, what then happened was two separate amendments were combined into one, and we're going to have to undo that. So what's proposed here is just to make it clear that there is a reduction of a penalty in certain circumstances. So those words are inserted in the objects of the bill. And that is a correction that we are requesting the committee to make, just so that it is clear that that was accepted. Other than that, members will be familiar with the objects of the bill.
Wait there, Thomas.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, social front. Honorable members, that's the object of the bill. Do we agree? Hello, honorable members. Object of the bill, agreed?
Agreed, sir.
Agreed, Jalil.
Okay. Good, Chair.
The next clause.
Thank you, Chair. We move on to clause one, and all that's happening here is
recording in progress.
Name has changed, so this is the update for that.
Clause 3, agreed.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Brings us to clause 4. In clause 4, what's happening here is dividends tax under certain circumstances, where an intermediary does not have the funds to make the refund after a year.
Franz, while you're there, section 64, is that M not supposed to be in brackets and it be a small M instead of capital? What is it all about?
So section 64M, Chair?
Yeah.
So that is meant to be a capital M, because there's a whole series of sections that were inserted here. And so the old way of doing this was to use Latin, which we don't use anymore. The modern way of doing it is simply to use a capital letter if you need to insert a section in between, say, 64 and 65. So you'll get 64M in and so on.
Oh, so this is modern.
Yep. I mean, once if you have a look at the Income Tax Act, you'll come across sections like section 89 bis, 89 ter, 89 quat. And, mean, nobody uses Latin anymore, so we've switched over to using capital letters instead.
Okay. Clause 4, honorable members, agreed?
Agreed, sir.
Agreed. Next clause.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 5 is simply a textual correction. We've inserted of there.
Clause 5, honorable members, agreed?
Agreed, Chair.
Clause 6, there's an error in the cross-reference, which you will see. There's a subsection 1, which should come before item A.
Spirits, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Thank you. So clause 7 is where one of the significant changes begins. This is where we start providing clarity around what an invoice is for customs purposes. And so you will see there are other changes that ripple on from this, but this is the first place where that happens.
Clause 7, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed.
Clause 8. Speaks to the advanced ruling system that is being introduced into the Customs and Excise Act.
Agreed, honorable members, plus 8.
Agreed, sir.
Agreed. 9.
Clause 9 essentially ensures that the commissioner may prescribe rules around types of cargo. That are dealt with by a container depot. That are imported.
Clause 9, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, sir.
Agreed.
So clause 10 is again an invoice change. Since we now have a definition of invoice, we don't need to insert the as prescribed in.
Clause 10, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed.
Agreed.
Clause 11 is to enhance reporting and then also to deal with the clarification around invoice.
Clause 11. Honourable members, agreed?
Agreed.
Clause 12 is in respect of the clarification around invoices again.
Clause 12, agreed, honourable members?
Agreed.
Clause 13 ties in with the introduction of advanced rulings.
Clause 13, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, sir.
Agreed, yeah.
Clause 14 again deals with advanced rulings.
Clause 14, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, sir.
Agreed.
Clause 15, again, as you'll see from the cross-reference, deals with advanced rulings.
14, agreed. 15, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 16 deletes an obsolete provision.
16, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed,
Chair. Clause 17 now gets us to the meat of the advanced rulings system. And so you'll see this is quite a lengthy clause, and it provides the framework for issuing advanced rulings in the customs context.
There are definitions.
So as members would have seen from Clause 17, it deals with all the aspects of how you would apply for the ruling, what happens if there's a change in law that would impact on the ruling. So it tries to create a comprehensive framework for the issuing of rulings and how they'll be treated.
Clause 17, agreed, honourable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
So Clause 18 then is again one of the consequential amendments on the introduction of advanced rulings.
Clause 18, agreed, honourable members?
Agreed,
Chair. Agreed.
Clause 19, again, fits in with the clarifications around invoicing. So that's, again, part of that package.
Clause 19, agreed, honourable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Agreed, was another.
Thank you. Clause 20, you'll see here we've again deleted prescribed because we now have a definition of invoice, so these are not superfluous.
Clause 20, agreed, honourable members?
Agreed.
Agreed, Chair.
Thank you. Clause 21, again, deals with the clarifications around invoice.
Clause 21, agreed, honourable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed, Umrulum.
Thank you. Clause 22, again, dealing with the clarification around invoices and to deal with the fact that you may have different requirements for different classes of goods. That's why the proviso comes in.
Clause 22, agreed, honourable member?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 23 is again a name change of a neighbouring country.
Clause 23, agreed, honourable member?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Thank you. Clause 24. What happens here is that if your supplies in a year are going to exceed R1 million, you need to register for VAT. And that rule applies both to local suppliers and offshore electronic service providers. There may, however, be a case where you're going to exceed it essentially for a small amount for a short period, and then you're going to fall below again. So it makes no sense to register you for a month or two, then deregister you promptly again. So this allows a degree of flexibility that you do not, the commissioner may in fact allow you not to register if that happens.
Clause 24, agreed, honourable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 25, again, a name change.
Clause 25, agreed, honourable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Clause 26 is, again, where one of the changes needs to come in, if the committee permits. Now, this amends Section 221 of the Tax Administration Act. Unfortunately, what happened here was that there's a second part to it in the bill as introduced. So there's an A and a B. The A is what you see in front of you. The B is actually meant to be an amendment of Section 222, which is what you then see here. So what needs to happen is Section 26 essentially needs to be split in two. And then what Clause 26 does is it says that when we are in excuse me, in the process of dealing with an understatement penalty, the employment tax incentive is also considered to be a tax, so that the understatement penalty system will work.
Clause 26, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Thank you. So this then becomes the new clause 27, and this is the clause that ensures that there isn't a duplication of penalties between the understatement penalty system and the employment tax incentive penalty system.
Clause 27, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Thank you. excuse me. Clause 28. Here we have a recognized controlling body, being IRBA, that has requested that it be removed from the statutory recognized controlling bodies because of a change in its law. So that is what this clause does.
Clause 28, agreed, honorable member?
Agreed.
Thank you. Clause 29 deals with the changes around a tax compliance status. There are two changes here, essentially. The one is that there's an indication that a taxpayer is a newly registered taxpayer under certain circumstances. If we scroll down a little, you'll see what those circumstances are. So as soon as you've reached your first date for payment, or you have submitted the returns, so assuming you submitted a return earlier, or if a year has passed, then you're no longer new. And then the second half of this deals with the case where there is a question around the correctness of the tax compliance status as a result of a suspicion around fraud, misrepresentation, or non-disclosure of material facts. Under those circumstances, SARS must give the taxpayer notice that we are considering taking away access to tax clearance status, and then the taxpayer has 10 days to come back to SARS and tell us why they don't think that would be appropriate. And only after that has occurred may SARS, in fact, revoke access to status.
Clause 29, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed.
Agreed.
Clause 30, this is part of the set of changes that it require to ensure that the understatement penalty applies where there is an overclaim or a fictitious claim around the employment tax incentive.
Clause 30, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 31, now this deals with an incorrect incorrect reference, as you can see, so not too much happening here.
Clause 31, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed, Chair.
Clause 32, this is a technical correction. This is in fact so
Frank,
if members sorry.
I thought you were pausing because you were saying
no.
In fact, so I was waiting for you to finish.
Oh, apologies, Chair. As I say, this is a technical correction. What has happened here is this is an amendment that has in fact been duplicated, so we're correcting that.
Okay. Clause 32, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Agreed. So, clause 33, again a technical correction.
Clause 33, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
And then clause 34 is the short title and commencement date for the act.
Clause 34, short title, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Can a member move for the adoption of the bill?
I so move, Chair.
Honorable Mrolong moves. Second.
I second.
Second, Chair.
Second, Goma Village. Dr. George.
Thank you, Chair. Please reserve the DEA's position. Thank you.
DEA's position recorded. Okay. Let's move to the next bill. Yanga, who's presenting?
Chair, sorry to interrupt you, but it's the report on the bill, Chair.
I thought we'll deal with the report. Okay, let's deal with the report of this bill once and for all. Then we move to the next bill in the report. Can you put the report on the screen? And you go direct to observations and recommendations. Honorable members, 5-1, agreed.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed. Can a member move for the adoption of the report?
Chair, if I may intervene for a moment, please.
Yes, Franz.
It may be appropriate to note that the bill has been approved or reported with amendments.
No, okay.
Chair, yes, that we'll put in when we send it off for ATC, so that will there will be 6.2 just to refer to the bill in the B format.
No, okay, thanks, Alan. Can Goma Village, you have moved for the adoption of the bill? Can you move again?
My
hand is up, Chair.
Okay.
Oh, Noxie.
My hand is up. I just wanted to check on the sentence that reads, the committee believes that all public comments on the draft TALAB were adequately responded to by SARS. And I think we should insert after end that and the committee supports the bill. I'm raising this, Chair, because there were other things that came before, like the public comments and the response by SARS. And therefore, it might be read confusion when we do not state that the committee supports the bill. That is my view, Chair. I can be corrected by the drafters. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, if we adopt the bill now, we'll change that to say the committee support. Are you moving?
Yes, Chair, I'm moving with amendments. Thank you, Chair.
With amendment. Second?
I'm second,
Chair.
Second, that woman will let Dr. George.
Thank you, Chair. Can you please reserve the position of the DEA on the report? Thank you.
Okay, DEA's position is recorded. The bill and the report has been adopted. The next bill, Madam Yanga.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Alan, can you please put the bill? Thank you. If you go to the preamble, those are the provisions that the bill seeks to amend, or other acts that the bill seeks to amend, because you know that the taxation laws amendment bill will amend the Income Tax Act, the Customs, the VAT, the Carbon Tax Act, and other taxation laws amendment act. So this is what the bill seeks to amend, Chair.
Okay. Honourable members, have the object agreed?
Agreed, Chair. Okay. Alan, we have to go to clause one because there's A, B, C, D up to K. Even though clause one, in terms of the Income Tax Act, is the definitions, but there are a lot of amendments there that are made on that clause. Clause one in A, the amendments to A seeks to clarify the exclusion of participatory interest investment schemes from the definition of foreign dividend. That is clause one in A. We are making amendments to the definition of foreign dividend. In clause 1B, that one is a technical correction whereby we put an N, that is a small amendment. In clause 1C, amendments are made to paragraph EA of the definition of gross income to clarify that the paragraph EA of definition of gross income regarding public sector funds, this is consequential to amendments that were made last year. Subclause D, that one is a small amendment whereby we correct grammatical error from listings to listings. And subclause E, that is also a small amendment whereby we put the word any. In subclause F, that one is a big amendment, but because we are deleting a proviso, because the proviso was added to the definition in the amendments that were made last year. So the current proviso is superfluous. In subclause G, that one is a big amendment. We are clarifying the compulsory annuitization and protection of vested rights when transferring to a public sector fund. Subclause H, that one is a small amendment whereby we are making clarification by making reference to Section 37C of the Pension Funds Act. Subclause I, that one is a small amendment whereby we're making amendment to the definition of pension preservation fund to add, to ensure that transfers from pension preservation fund to a provident preservation fund are permissible. Subclause J, that one is a big amendment whereby we're clarifying the compulsory annuitization and protection of vested rights when transferring to a public sector fund. Subclause K, that one is a small amendment. We are making clarification by making reference to Section 37C of the Pension Funds Act. And subclause L, we are making amendments to the definition of retirement annuity funds, whereby we review the transfer of total interest in a retirement annuity fund. So those are the amendments that are made to clause one, Chair.
Clause one, agreed, honourable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed. Next clause.
Clause two, Chair, amendments to Section 7B of the Income Tax Act, dealing with the reviewing the timing of the accrual and incurral of variable remuneration, Chair. You remember during the briefings, we went at length in clarifying the proposed amendment.
Clause two, agreed, honourable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Clause 3, this is a small amendment in Section 7, Cap C of the Income Tax Act, whereby we seek to add the word company to clarify that loan made to companies are included in this section.
Clause 3, agreed, honourable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
In clause 4, there are a lot of amendments. In A is easy one because we introduced the Insurance Act of 2017, so they were updating the provisions of Section 9D in line with the new provisions of the Insurance Act. And then clause B, we are making amendments to clarify the dealing provision in respect of royalties derived by controlled foreign companies. And then clause C, subclause C under 4. We are clarifying the treatment of amounts from hybrid equity instruments deemed to be income under controlled foreign company rules. So all of these amendments are made in Section 9D of the Income Tax Act dealing with taxation of controlled foreign companies.
Clause 4, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed.
Agreed.
In clause 5, we are dealing with the apportioning of interest exemption when an individual ceasing to be tax resident. They were closing a loophole, Chair.
Clause 5, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed, honorable Nkomo.
In clause 6, there we are making a technical correction whereby we are correcting the cross-referencing of the provision.
Clause 6, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed. Agreed.
In clause 7, we are making amendments to the definition of living annuity in section 10 cap C so as to correct the cross-referencing also.
Clause 7, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed.
Agreed.
In clause 8, 8A, the amendments there, gender neutral, because every year the Law Commission will always point to us some of the provisions, Law Commission, Law Research Commission, some of the provisions that are not gender neutral in the Income Tax Act. So all the time when we make amendments, we'll make those technical corrections to be gender neutral. The next one deals with the tax treatment of an asset acquired as a government grant in kind. That is clause 11B, clause 8B.
We're still in
clause 8.
Okay, clause 8, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
In clause 9, these are amendments to Section 12L as a result of the announcement made by the Minister in Carbon Tax, whereby we're extending the energy efficiency savings tax incentives from 2023 to 2026.
Clause 9, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
In clause 10, we are dealing with amendments to Section 19 of the Income Tax Act dealing with debt forgiveness rules.
Clause 10, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chairperson.
Clause 11, that is a small amendment as a matter of style and consistency in clause 11. It's a technical correction. Clause 11.
Clause 11, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Chair, if we say it's a matter of style and consistency, if Yanga could just say what it is that we are then changing.
Okay, if we go to clause 11, Chairperson, sorry. You'll see the opening words there, it's like any expenditure incurred constituting. So there we're going to say any expenditure which constitutes. That's all we're doing. Instead of saying constituting.
Okay.
Okay. Agreed. The next section.
In section 23M, these are consequential amendments to the amendments that were made last year regarding interest limitation rules, whereby we had to make special amendments for mining operations because they are treated differently in terms of the Income Tax Act. So these are consequential amendments to the interest limitation rules to take into account capital expenditure regime for mining companies.
Agreed. Section 12, honorable members.
Agreed.
Clause 13, we are dealing with the amendments to Section 24 of the Income Tax Act, dealing with the debtor's allowance to limit the impact on labor arrangements.
Clause 13, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Clause 14, this is one of the big amendments. You remember SAICA, that is clause 14 and 15. Clause 14 is amendments to section 28 dealing with short-term insurers as a result of impact of IFRS 17. So clause 28 deals with short-term insurers and clause 29 Cape A deal with long-term insurers. Honorable Nokolo, will remember that, you remember when they were saying that they want the 10 years and yet you are giving them the 6 years phase in. So clause 14 and 15 deal with those amendments.
Clause 14, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, sir.
Agreed. Yanga, amaxhosa onke abathi babanoxolo is cross bombed.
We fall under her claim. We are under her umbrella.
I'm a bunga. What is it?
It's this colonial thing.
Sorry, I knew that I'm saying something wrong.
Yeah, not too young. I'll follow to which plan. I'm a Ziz.
I'm a Ziz.
You are a Ziz when I look at you. Okay.
Hey, you know that too, Chair. Hey, yes, I'm moving.
I'm in interest for Mankolo. Let's proceed and leave this other advert.
Clause 29, Cap A, Honorable Abraham will remember that is the one for long-term insurers, whereby they made a long case wanting 10-year phase-in, and then we settled on 6 years phase-in. That is the one, taxation impact of IFRS 17 on long-term insurers. That is clause 15.
Clause 15, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, sir.
Great.
Clause 16, consequential amendments to 2021 amendments dealing with the reversal of the nil base cost rules applicable to intra-group transactions.
Clause 16, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 17, Chair, asked Franz Tomasek previously, why Section 64 cap M? So here on 64, we've got 64FA and 64 cap A, all in big caps. 64 clause 17 deals with amendment to Section 64 cap FA, dealing with the consequential amendments that were made last year, with situation where no dividends tax is payable due to the application of the tax treaty between the two countries.
Clause 17, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 18, it's a similar amendment to 17, whereby we also make consequential amendments as a result of the amendments we've made in Clause 17.
Clause 18, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed. Clause 19, we are deleting subparagraph 3 of paragraph 4 of the second schedule as a result of the amendments that have been made dealing with retirement of a Provident Fund member on grounds other than ill health. So these are consequential amendments, deletion of that subparagraph.
Clause 19, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 20, it's a technical correction whereby we replace all with a full stop. Because they said that when you've got all, the interpretation is different.
Okay. Thanks. Clause 20, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Clause 21, another one which is gender neutral. If we've got his, we must put her.
Okay. Him or her. Do you say him or her, or you put her?
His or her, yes.
Okay.
Remember previously the tax legislation was written in the male gender, but in terms of the interpretation of statutes, male means female, singular means plural. But now we are forced to be gender neutral, even though the interpretation of statutes say singular means plural and male means female. Clause 22.
Okay. We adopted.
Or 21.
21, honorable members. Agreed.
Agreed, Chair.
Clause 22 deals with the apportioning of capital gains tax annual exclusion when an individual ceases to be tax resident. There we are closing a loophole, Chair.
22, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 23, we update the government grants each and every year in line with the government grants that are issued by the Department of Trade, Industry and Cooperation.
Clause 23, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Yeah.
In clause 24, we're making amendments to section 48 of the Customs and Excise Act so as to align the provisions thereof. That is a technical correction.
Clause 24, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Clause 25, the topical provisions amendments that were made in this TLEP dealing with vaping, taxation of electronic nicotine and non-nicotine delivery system. So those amendments are made in the Customs and Excise Act and according to the schedule. So we've included them in clause 25.
Clause 25, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 26 deals with the continuation of certain amendments because during the year, the Customs and Excise Act and even the VAT Act and even the Income Tax Act empower the minister to make amendments by regulations. So in order those amendments to become law, if they are made during the year, we have to include them in the TLAB. So clause 26 deals with the continuation of certain amendments that were made during the year.
Clause 26, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Clause 27A, you remember in 2019, we made amendments to the VAT Act to review the provision dealing with Section 72 ruling of the VAT. So subclause A is a consequential amendment whereby we are dealing with the Section 72 provision dealing with the cross-border leasing of foreign aircraft and ship. So we were advised by the taxpayers that we should connection to those aircraft because we were advised that you are able in terms of business to lease only the engine, not the aircraft. So that in A, we are making amendments to that. And in B, we are dealing with the amendments regarding the VAT treatment of flash title sales.
Clause 27, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
In clause 28, it's amendments dealing with treatment of temporary letting of immovable property. Last year, we made amendments, so these are technical corrections to the amendments made last year regarding VAT treatment of temporary letting of immovable property.
Clause 28, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed.
In clause 29, also Section 72 VAT rulings dealing with VAT treatment of documentary evidence for repossession. Because what happened is that when we reviewed the Section 72, we said in the budget that some of the rulings, not all of them, some of the rulings will be turned into law. So this now is the ruling that was issued by SARS dealing with documentary evidence for repossession. So we are making amendments in the legislation so as to make provision for that. That is clause 29.
Clause 29, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 30, technical correction, correcting spelling temporary to temporarily.
Clause 30, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 31, VAT rulings dealing with VAT treatment of documentary evidence for repossession.
Clause 31, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed, Chair.
Clause 32, it's VAT rulings dealing with the VAT treatment of registration of foreign suppliers, whereby we allow foreign suppliers to be registered in South Africa.
Clause 32, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 33, it's VAT ruling dealing with the treatment of pooling arrangements. So we are turning a ruling there into a legislation, into the provision in the legislation.
Clause 33, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Clause 34, we're extending the sunset date for R&D tax incentive from 2022 to 2024.
Clause 34, agreed, honorable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Clause 35, 36, and 37. In all of those clauses, we have to postpone the effective date of certain subsections due to the fact that we have not made provisions, amendments to the legislation dealing with unlisted trades. So in clause 35, we are postponing the effective date to amendments to section 8F3B2, 8F3C2, 8F3D to 2024.
Clause 35, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
And in clause 36, similar to 35, we are postponing those amendments to 2024. Those provisions to 2024.
Clause 35, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed.
Okay.
Clause, it was 36, Chair, similar to 35.
36.
And then clause 37, also, we are postponing the effective date from 1 January 2023 to 1 January 2024. That is clause 37.
Agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 38, the amendments now we're making, we've moved from the Income Tax Act, we're making amendments to the Carbon Tax Act. Clause 38 deals with the topical issue that has been discussed during public hearings regarding the increase in carbon tax from 2023 to 2030. So those proposed increases are all in clause 38.
Clause 38, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 39, also, carbon tax deals with limitation of electricity price neutrality deductions to electricity generation from fossil fuels, also carbon tax.
Clause 39, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 40, it's a Clause 40, it's a small amendment regarding clarifying the applicability of tax neutral transfers from a pension fund to a provident fund, where they were changing the word contribution to transfers. It's a small amendment.
Clause 40, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 41, consequential amendments made to last year regarding clarifying the definition of contributed tax capital.
Clause 41, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed.
Clause 42 deals with consequential amendments that were made last year regarding the assessed loss restrictions. Whereby we are to cater for mining companies. So it's interaction between the application of the assessed loss rules and capital expenditure regime for mining companies.
Clause 42, agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, Chairperson.
Agreed.
And clause 43, short title and commencement. Thank you, Chair. Yeah, done.
43 agreeable members.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed. Can a member move for the adoption of the bill?
Chair, I move for the adoption of the bill.
Honorable Nkomo moves for the adoption of the bill. Second.
I second.
Second, Umavileta. Let's move to the report. Dr. George?
Please, can you reserve the position of the DEA?
The position of the DEA is recorded. Report. Okay, 5-1, agreed.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed. 5-2.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed. 5-3.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed. 5-4.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed. 5-5.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed. 5-6.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed. 5-7.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed. Can a member... I got admitted, yeah. Can a member move for the adoption of the report?
I move, Chair.
Honorable Kasana moves for the adoption. Second?
I second, Chair.
Honorable Marilla, second the adoption. Dr. George?
Please reserve the position of the DA. Thanks, Chair.
The position of the DA is reserved. While waiting for our colleagues from communications, Franz and Young, with all these bills that we are passing here, the flow of counterfeit goods into the country continues unabated. We don't seem to be winning. And these are people who don't pay tax. They make lots of money. It's a very big economy, that counterfeit goods economy. Now we've got Zama-Zamas. We are taxing mining companies. They are trying their best under difficult circumstances. Then we have got the Zama-Zama industry, which is making billions. I'm told a loaf of bread underground in the Zama-Zama sector is 200 rand. These Zama-Zamas are terrorizing women, raping women in communities where they are operating. Where is the problem? Is it law enforcement or what is it? Because we as a law-abiding citizen, we are subsidizing criminals in this country. And sometimes we are able to be xenophobic. We are not xenophobic. People can come from their own countries. We accommodate them here. then they get involved all sorts of wrong things and not even pay tax and collude with the local people. Where is the system failing us? We are passing this legislation. Now I'm in China, now as I speak, doing my constituency work after here. If I go into town here in Pretoria, it will be counterfeit goods all over. If I drive to Ekurhuleni and Krugersdorp, it's Zamazamas all over. Law enforcers don't see these counterfeit goods as they cross the boundaries, I mean the borders, as they are sold on the street, as people operate illegal mining activities. Counterfeit, law enforcement agencies don't see all these things. And now we must pay tax for them. And Bona, they make billions and get involved on all sorts of other things, including terrorizing women and killing children. Where is the problem? Can you explain? Because you come from executive, and now we're passing these tax laws, but there does not seem to be any improvement on clamping down on illicit activities, which are making billions in this country. Where is the problem? Is it the problem SARS and its enforcement at the borders? Is the problem Home Affairs? Is the problem the police? Where is the problem? We're told there will be a border management agency. How far are we? Can you please respond while Alan is admitting our colleagues from communications?
If I can come in, Chair, the main purpose of the Income Tax Act and other money bills is to make provision for the recovery of taxes from persons so that the money can be paid into the National Revenue Fund. So the bills are good because we make provision for the imposition of taxes so that the money can be paid to the National Revenue Fund. And once money is in the National Revenue Fund, it's allocated by the minister through the budget process. So I don't want you maybe to feel that you pass these bills every year and then you don't see anything. The purpose of the bills is fulfilled because without these bills, there won't be any budget to be allocated from the National Revenue Fund. So the Taxation Laws Amendment Bill, which we pass every year, do fulfill the purpose. One can say that you can depend on enforcement as well as counterfeit goods. And in terms of the goods, counterfeit goods coming into the borders, then the Border Management Agency was established. But also SARS assist there in terms of enforcement. But I think France can come in terms of tax administration and enforcement.
Thanks, Yanga, and thank you, Chair, for those questions. So I'm probably not the best person to talk because I'm not that close to the enforcement space. But I think SARS has a role to play along with other government agencies. And sometimes that role is perhaps a little indirect. So let me take the Zama example that's been mentioned. Now, one of the questions you have to ask is what happens to that gold once it's been mined? And so what we were seeing was a very worrying trend around gold and the introduction of what we believed to be illicit gold into the supply chain. And that was done for a couple of reasons. I mean, the one reason obviously is to move the gold and get it sold. The other is to exploit the VAT system to get undeserved VAT refunds. And so we have introduced, and Treasury organized the regulations around this, what's known as a domestic reverse charge for VAT, which makes it much more difficult from the VAT system. Now, that doesn't directly deal with the Zama-Zama problem, but what it does do is it makes it more difficult for that gold to enter the normal supply chains, and so makes it more difficult for them to operate. And that's why I say solving these kinds of problems is not, I think, one agency's issue. It is an issue that needs to be dealt with across multiple parts of government who all have a role to play. And so we are certainly trying to do our bit to curb some of the illicit activity. Another issue that we've been working on is the importation of clothing often with very, very low declared prices. And you'll be aware of the difficulties the trade union movement has with that kind of practice. And so we have enforcement actions where we are trying to clamp down on that. And recently we were successful in obtaining the Supreme Court of Appeals judgment in a matter where up to that point we'd been unsuccessful in challenging the practices of one of the companies that we believe was involved in that kind of activity. So we had to go all the way to the Supreme Court of Appeal to get a judgment that allowed us to properly question what was going on in those circumstances. So it's not an easy task, and my colleagues in the enforcement space have a lot of challenges. But we're certainly trying to do what we can to assist to address these issues.
Okay, thanks, Franz and Young. I think Alan, we still have an outstanding report from that task team, which is led by, is it FSCA in this regard? We acknowledge the improvement that is there in SARS. The other day when we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of SARS, I was there. There is an operation room downstairs there, which is one of the state-of-the-art kind of an operation with the latest technology. Probably one day we can take members to have a meeting there, because the last time when we were at SARS, was it 2019, that operation room was not there. So we'll create space when we do oversight in Gauteng to go to that operation room. So we acknowledge the improvement, but we are worried that this thing of illicit kind of activities is growing, and now they are even so brazen that they are killing and raping women, and they don't care. So something has to be done. Alan, have we been joined by our colleagues from communications?
Yes, Chairperson. Beauty just sent me a member. There's currently 5, 6, 7 members from communications.
It's Honorable Man Nelly, the chairperson in the platform.
Yes, Chair is.
Okay. Yes, sure. Okay, sure, Comrade Manelli. Let's proceed. Welcome, Honorable Manelli, Comrade Boyce, chairperson, and colleagues from Communications Portfolio Committee. You have written a letter to us in regard to the Post Bank. We had a meeting to discuss the tax-related matters. So we included that item after we have processed the committee business. But we realized that it will be important that we have this joint meeting. So that, because we requested Advocate Jenkins to interpret for us as to what does it mean, where do we get involved as the standing committee, finance, as the matter now, it is still with the communications. Do we get involved now or after you will have passed the bill when the bank will have been established? Because as this committee, we are responsible for playing oversight on the financial sector. But now that the bill has not yet been passed and the bank has not yet been established, what becomes our involvement? So there are a number of questions that we're asking as members of the Standing Committee Finance, and we took a decision that it will be important that we have this joint meeting so that you can take us through, and we requested that if you can come with officials from communications and also officials from Parliament, the support team of communications and Treasury. I hope Alan Treasury is still here to assist us. Let me hand over to you, Comrade Boyce. Chairperson, over to you.
I hope I'm audible, Chair.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Thank you. Greetings to you, Chairperson, Honorable Masongai, Honorable members of the Standing Committee on Finance, Honorable members who have been able to join from our Committee on Communications and Digital Technologies, representatives of the department, in particular, Deputy Shalembe, leading the team responsible for entity oversight in the department. That's the one who speak to the actual bill. Of course, I must say, firstly, indicate, Chair, I was trying to check your letter of response, which necessitated us to come here. That just to clarify, we have written two letters to yourself. First letter being that of the 4th, which was about consultation on the bill. The second letter of the 9th, which was, of course, linking the setting up of the Post Bank, but also challenges the South African Post Office from which the Post Bank operates from, and in the future, looking at still utilizing that infrastructure with the challenges that we have at the Post Office. And therefore, there's a letter of acknowledgement, as I say, which is what brings us here. From your side, acknowledging the two letters under the heading Urgent Intervention in the South African Post Office. I'm sure as you then speak to the matter on the table, you'll be able to indicate where finance comes in, because the resolution of the committee as it relates to problems of finance at SAPO was to write to both the Standing Committee on Finance as well as Appropriations. We're still following up on feedback from Appropriations. So I just thought I should start from that point before I then indicate where the committee stands at this point. As it relates to the bill, like I said, I would not make that presentation. It will be dealt with by the department as it originated from the side of the executive, referred to the committee as 80 seat by Parliament. 80 seat to our committee because at this point in time, Post Bank is one of those entities reporting through the committee. Of course, just from a committee side of things, we have, having received that referral, we have done what is required to call for public submissions. Of course, gave kind of dates, and I would not like spend time on those now. We realized in the first round there was really not much of interest. We had only one response. The committee then resolved again to reopen the process so as to attract more. We still didn't get responses at the time. Agreed again as a way of ensuring this maximum public participation, opened it up, of course, impressed on all members to even use their constituencies to try and get comments. And I must say, out of that process, we're able to get comments from almost about five organizations in that score. And amongst those would be the Congress of South African Trade Unions, which was the first to respond in the first round of submissions. We also had Right to Know responding in the extended period. We also had the Association of South Africa, BASA. We also had the Ombuds officers responding as well as yeah, I've just probably left one or so, but we have those on record, and of course in their comments there was clear support and that we need to move with speed. However, they have also proposed some amendments in terms of how matters have been put on the bill, and I'm sure as the department presents would speak to those, because they had to respond to such amendments. Right. Then, of course, members would have raised a point about the need to engage with finance to get finance to speak on the matter in case they may have matters that they need to comment on. That would have been done with a clear understanding that the referral is to the committee where the entity reports, but it was part of the broader consultation. But also a feeling from other members that probably finance skills may not exist. And I'm using may because we've not checked each other in that way. May not exist in the finance, and therefore the finance committee may be better placed as we talk to an establishment of a bank. We've also understood that at this point, we're dealing with a bank controlling company, which is a move away from SAPO that used to be that to government say creating a controlling company, and reasons given would have been the financial position of SAPO and therefore would not qualify the test of the Reserve Bank in awarding that status. So the committee has been engaging the bill, try to look at every possible matter that may create problems in terms of approving or recommending this bill to be approved. It may be that some of the matters may be seen as matters at an operational level when the bank is operational. But those fears could not be ignored completely. Hence, a need then to engage with yourselves. That's as it relates to the bill itself. But like I said, what then gets to complicate the discussion is the fact that yes, you'll pass the bill, have the bank, but it operates within SAPO, with SAPO is faced with financial challenges that can lead to closure of some of the branches, of course, affecting service delivery, as I stated in the letter that wrote on the 9th to yourselves, and therefore could defeat the noble idea of having a fully fledged state bank, because it will operate on what others would call non-existent infrastructure if the post office in that score is closed. So I just thought that would be my opening line. Of course, one has to acknowledge that in your response, you needed the chairperson. Actually, we were meeting as the committee, and the committee would have agreed to stick to its request, where members could engage freely without limiting it to engagement between the chairperson and the committee on the other side, which is the Standing Committee of Finance. So that's where we are. Like I said, probably members at some point would come in, but Omega Shalembe is from the department as per request, and he would be able to just speak to the bill itself in a way that takes the summary I've given, that the understanding, the focus is on the bank controlling company, which would be a requirement for the license to be issued to have Postbank as a fully fledged bank. That is it, Honorable Chair Masonai.
Okay, I have a challenge with the video on my side, but be that as it may, let's proceed. I think let's take the DG just to give us a briefing, a short one, just to indicate as to where does Finance Committee come in, because the rest of the bill is supposed to be processed by the Portfolio Committee Communications. Over to you, DG. Then later, after officials would have made input and whosoever you will indicate will have to come on board, we'll also bring in the legal officials from Parliament. Then I will open for members, both from Finance and from Communications. Mr. Shalembe, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to you and the honorable members. As the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Communication has introduced me, I am Omega Shalembe. I am the Deputy Director General responsible for SOE oversight in the Department of Communications and Digital Technologies. Chairperson, we have prepared a short presentation which basically summarizes what we are trying to do with the bill, which in a way we are hoping is going to assist this joint meeting in determining if indeed there is a role for the Standing Committee on Finance in this process. I've got my colleague who's going to assist me with flighting the presentation. Zaitoun, if you may, please. Thank you very much again, Chairperson. This is the outline of the presentation. In terms of, first of all, we'll start with the purpose of this presentation, and then we'll go through the status of processing the bill right up to where it is now in the Portfolio Committee. And then we'll present our rationale for the joint meeting that we are having today as we understand it. And then we'll go deeper into the background as to where we come from. We'll go into the objectives of the amendment to the Postbank Act or the bill, which is being proposed. Then we'll go even deeper into the role of what is called the bank controlling company, which in essence is what we are trying to establish or provide for its establishment through this bill. We will present also the overview of the post-bank licensing application process, and I will touch briefly on the comments received from the portfolio committee public hearing process, and then I will conclude. As an annex, we have attached a couple of slides about the financial position of the post office, which I will be guided by you, Chairperson, and perhaps Chairperson Manelli, if I need to go into it immediately, or we will reserve it after the discussion of the post-bank bill. Next. So the purpose of today is really to present the South African Post-Bank Amendment Bill and matters related thereto to the joint meeting of the committees. Next slide. Where is the process right now, or what is the status update with respect to the processing of the bill in Parliament? The Post-Bank Amendment Bill was developed by the department in consultation with key stakeholders. Those stakeholders were the Post Office, Post Bank, National Treasury, and of course we included the public consultation process. After the information was received from the public consultation process and inputs from the other stakeholders, the bill was revised and then submitted to Cabinet for approval to introduce it to Parliament after the department completed its own processing, including receiving certifications by relevant authorities and structures in the asset cluster. Indeed, Cabinet granted approval on 9 March 2022 for the introduction of the Post-Bank Amendment Bill into Parliament. The bill was then subsequently introduced in Parliament and also certified by the Office of the Chief Technical Advisor as being consistent with the Constitution and properly drafted in the form and style which conforms to legislative practices, and that took place on the 5th of May 2022. The processing of the Post-Bank Amendment Bill in Parliament officially started after that, and we have presented on several occasions to the committee, starting from 31 May 2022. The Portfolio Committee on Communications published the bill for public comment, and that publication was further extended to allow for further submissions of public comment. This led to public hearings taking place on 25 October 2022. Next slide. So what do we understand as the rationale for the joint meeting of today? It is that after numerous deliberations on the bill in the Portfolio Committee on Communication, the committee resolved that the input or the comments from the Standing Committee on Finance be sought on the bill, or alternatively, a joint meeting of the two committees to obtain the comments or input. In our understanding, this is emanating from the consideration that issues of banking and finance are in the purview of the Standing Committee on Finance, not necessarily because the bill requires this joint standing, but it's just to make sure that if there are any issues that the committee or the Standing Committee on Finance wishes to raise, let those be raised upfront. Next slide. So the background to the corporatization of the Post Bank. The Post Office and Post Bank were already separated by the Post Bank Act number 9 of 2010, which is the act we are seeking to amend with this bill, which provided for the separation of the Post Bank, which was then a division of the Post Office, into a standalone company. That act provided that the minister shall gazette and determine the effective date of the separation of assets and liabilities of the two companies, and that was determined to be the 1st of April 2019. However, in terms of the same act, the post office remained the sole owner and shareholder of the post bank. And in terms of the banking legislation, if you own a bank, that means that you are then the bank controlling company. However, when the Banks Act was amended, it imposed a requirement that only financially viable SOCs can apply for a license to be a bank or a bank controlling company. Therefore, after the amendment of the Banks Act by National Treasurer, there was a need to amend the Post Bank Act to remove the post office as a bank controlling company altogether. Next slide. So what are we trying to do with the Amendment B, or the objectives of the Post Bank Amendment B? The main purpose of the amendment is to amend the South African Post Bank SOC Limited Act number 9 of 2010 in order to comply with the requirements of the Banks Act, which requires that only viable SOC can apply for a banking license or become a bank controlling company. In that way, we will be proposing the removal of post office or SAPO as the sole owner and the shareholder of the post bank. This will mean we are amending the shareholding arrangements for the post bank, transferring shareholding from South African post office to the government through the creation of a new bank controlling company. The bill also seeks to facilitate the establishment and registration of the bank controlling company in terms of the Banks Act and to provide for matters connected therewith. The Ministry of Communications and Digital Technologies, as the shareholder ministry or department, to be responsible directly for the Post Bank as a standalone company on behalf of government. This is to be effected by establishing the bank controlling company between the Post Bank and the department in the reporting structure. Then we are also proposing to amend other sections of the Act which are impacted by the change in the Post Bank reporting or ownership structure. Upon the enactment of the Post Bank Bill, the bank controlling company for Post Bank will be registered in terms of Section 43 of the Banks Act to exercise control over the Post Bank. That registration will then conclude the Post Bank license application process. And we would hope then that at that time, the Post Bank shall receive the license as a commercial banking operation. Next slide. Next slide, please, Ritu. So what is the role of the bank controlling company? A bank controlling company is required to be registered in terms of Section 43 of the Banks Act whenever you are registering a bank to exercise control over the bank. It becomes a shareholder of reference for capital adequacy and in terms of compliance and submission of statutory monthly returns as stipulated in the Banks Act regulations and circulars. The implication is that the BCC, or the bank controlling company, will step in to recapitalize and support its subsidiary bank if it runs into financial difficulty. One of the key requirements is that the BCC must be in a financially sound position in terms of Section 44(2)(e) of the Banks Act. Unfortunately, as we have indicated, SAPO is not in a financially sound position to meet the requirement for registration as a BCC. And again, there will be very high capital adequacy requirements if SAPO were to be the direct shareholder of the Post Bank, given its current position. Also, the Post Office's non-banking services pose a threat to the safeguarding of depositors' funds, in that government will be obliged to provide ongoing financial support to, in order to maintain the business structure position. Next slide. This may look like a very busy slide, but I'm just going to go to the two boxes at the extreme right, extreme bottom right, number 7 and 8. Basically, the diagram traces where we come from way back in 2016, where application for the authorization to establish the bank was granted, right up to the incorporation of the Postbank, a company, in 2017, the application for registration as a bank, also in 2017. Now we are awaiting the application to register a bank controlling company, which shall take place immediately as soon as this bill is promulgated into law. Registration of the bank will be the final step in number 8 in terms of Section 17 of the Banks Act. Next slide. As the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Communications has indicated, there were inputs or comments received from organizations that made submissions on the bill. These are the following institutions that made a submission to the Portfolio Committee. The Right to Know. There were basically two comments that the Right to Know made. The first one related to a provision in the amendment bill which says the board of the Postbank shall be appointed by the minister in consultation with cabinet. Right to Know then proposed that perhaps we need to include a selection committee which will facilitate the process of the nominations into the Postbank board. We responded that indeed in the Principal Act, which is being amended, there is already a provision for a nominations committee to assist the minister in the appointment of the board of the Postbank. And we also indicated that the appointment process will not allow for willy-nilly involvement of the minister, who will change arbitrarily the appointments or nominations into that board. So we also indicated that the members of the Postbank board will have to follow a rigorous, fit and proper process to ensure that they are in a sound position to be directors of the bank. Please go back, Zaitun. The second issue that Right to Know raised was whether it is necessary for the minister as a shareholder to be involved in the appointment of the CEO and the CFO. Because as the things stand in the bill, we are proposing that the board shall appoint the CEO and the CFO with the concurrence of the minister. Again, we indicated that the process essentially lies with the board, and the board will only make a recommendation of the suitable candidate to the minister. And again, the minister will not be involved in the process of identifying and interviewing the relevant candidate. So the next organization that made the input into the bill process was the FSCA, the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. They were also in support of the issue that we need to include a definition of financial services in the bill so as to be in line with the Financial Advisory and Intermediary Services Act, FASE Act. So we accepted again that proposal, and we are proposing that the committee considers the insertion of that definition. Then COSATU made a submission which was again fully in support of the bill. And they went into town into saying how they see the post bank serving the unbanked rural communities and making sure that there is intense competition with the commercial banks to ensure that services are then delivered to the unbanked communities. COSATU even went on to then say government needs to make sure that it supports the bank in the form of really making it a state bank in terms of giving it business so that it is able to grow and become a fully fledged state bank. The last two organizations also made a minimal comments, which were talking about responsible lending to the poor and such. And we have accepted those comments. So we are saying, although the above organizations made comments in their submission, they are all in support of the Postbank Amendment Bill in recognition of the need to expand financial inclusion and competition.
Recording in progress.
The bill is more of an organizational restructuring as opposed to it being a banking or finance bill, in that it mainly provides for the transfer in shareholding of the South African Post Bank SOC Limited from the post office to government, and the creation of a bank controlling company for the Post Bank SOC Limited. That is the process that is required to be finalized to make sure that we meet the licensing requirements of the Post Bank. It is also worth noting that to manage the interdependent relationship between SAPO and Post Bank, the two entities are required by legislation to enter into a memorandum of agreement and service level agreement to ensure that there is that mutual and good relations between the two of them. So, Chairperson, that is the conclusion with respect to the Postbank Bill. We have just about two or so slides on the situation in the financial office, in the post office financially. I don't know if I should go to that right now or should I allow for a discussion on the Postbank Bill, Chairperson? All right, I await your guidance.
If you can all the presentations, Mr. Shelembe, so that when we get into discussions, we deal with all of them at once, because we don't have much time. Remember, we also have to go to the assembly this afternoon.
Thank you, Chair. Please stay tuned. Then show again the presentation. Just the last few slides. Yeah, next slide. The next slide is not showing. So the first slide here is showing us how the bank controlling company structure was determined and the considerations which were made, which then led to the post office not to qualify. I'm not going to go into details here, but we considered a situation where there is the current status quo, where SAPO is the owner of the Post Bank, which then failed the technical master in terms of the banks and Banks Act requirements. And then there were other permutations which were considered, ranging from option one right up to option number five. In our conversations with National Treasury, the option that succeeded was option number two, which says the BCC as a standalone company owned by government, which is what we are proposing to do right now in terms of this amendment bill. Other permutations also proved to be very expensive or not in compliance to the Banks Act. Next slide. So we are saying option two, as recommended by National Treasury, made Postbank report directly to government through the establishment of the BCC between the department and the Postbank was selected as the optimal reporting structure because of the lowest financial implications for the bank based on the results of financial audits and capital costing requirements of the various options. Again, SAPO's financial and liquidity position did not allow for it to become a BCC. To mitigate against the impact of the changes in the Postbank reporting structure on SAPO, National Treasury acknowledged that the financial risk associated with funding of the implied restructuring process and further affirmed that the costing of the restructuring of SAPO will need to be fed into the national budget process, the MTF process, considering the impact of unbundling of this on the solvency of SAPO. Prior to 1 April 2019, I've already made this point, Postbank operated as a division of SAPO. During that time, the post office benefited by having a strong statement of financial position with Postbank assets and liabilities being included in the company's financials. The profit of Postbank was also consolidated in SAPO's income statement. The separation of Postbank and reporting as a separate company has negatively impacted SAPO's financials from an income statement and statement of financial position point of view. At the time of separation, Postbank had a net asset value of 3.4 billion, which was essentially an accumulation of benefits derived from being a division of the post office. The post office branch network continues to provide clients with access to Postbank products and services. Next slide. So on SAPO funding requirements, we are saying the post office has developed a new strategy, which is called Building the Post Office of Tomorrow strategy, which is intended to reposition the entity. This culminated with the submission of the same strategy to cabinet in February 2022. Prior to the separation of Postbank from SAPO, the entity was already experiencing severe challenges in financial terms and operational terms. The impact of the separation has added to the deepening challenges. The Post Office of Tomorrow strategy has thus been developed, but cognizant of the urgent need to reposition the SAPO to become relevant in the digital era and find resolution to its deepening financial challenges. The strategy makes provision to review SAPO's operating model, to restructure it in such a way that it can operate as a sustainable, productive, and efficient entity. It thus eliminates organizational duplications and inefficiencies by restructuring the organization in such a way that the entity is positioned to become a modern and sustainable entity over the short to medium term. However, we are saying it is vital that the implementation of the strategy be supported by funding. There have been ongoing engagements between the Department, National Treasury, and SAPO on the requirement for funding assistance, including the meetings between the ministers. These engagements have created a reasonable expectation that the funding will be availed to the post office. To that effect, we have submitted both for the adjustment budget and the MTF process for the funding of the post office. It is now a matter of record that in the adjustment budget, no allocation was made to the post office. This is the last slide, which just shows the SAPO liabilities and funding requirements as at 30 September 2022. The SAPO liabilities total currently or then 8.2 billion, of which 5 billion is liability to creditors and statutory organizations, as well as a 3.2 billion, which is owed to Postbank. But we are saying these are the immediate funding requirements to assist the post office to implement its strategy. We had included in the adjustment request a 1 billion, which is required for cash flow deficit until 31 March 2023, whilst the new SAPO strategy of tomorrow is being implemented. We also then included for the MTF, first year of the MTF, which is next year, 23-24, 2.4 billion to fund the full implementation of the structures. The idea here is that it is not the responsibility of government to bail out the post office to meet the entirety of its liability, but that the post office should earn its revenues through the implementation of the strategy and then utilize those revenues to settle its liabilities over a period of time. In terms of the turnaround strategy, the post office is projected to turn around into a profit-making entity in year number three. There is still an outstanding discussion on the compensation for the loss of Postbank from the post office, but this is a further separate discussion still to be had. Chairperson, I think that is all that I have to say right now in a condensed way. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Shalembe. From the side of communications and digital, I'm not sure if you are done so that we can request the parliamentary teams, the legal team to come on board before I open for members.
I think we are done, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay. Advocate Jenkins and your colleagues from the portfolio communications digital, can you come on board so that we can open for members? Over to you.
Alan, it's Frank here.
Chair, I'm here.
Okay, over to you.
Chair, I'm sorry. I must have missed the question, Chair. I just went out to the bathroom. What is the question, Chairperson? My apologies. Maybe Alan can help me. I'm not hearing the chair.
Oh, sorry. I was muted. I was saying that Mr. Shalembe has now presented on the rationale of the bill, and it clarifies the matter that we have requested them here for. If you remember, we didn't understand the letter that was written to us. What was it that it was requesting SCOF to do?
Yes.
I think now we have a better understanding. But I wanted that before we open up for members to comment from the side of yourselves as officials.
Yes.
Is there anything, any comment that you would like to make?
No, Chair, not from my side. Thank you very much. My apologies that I had to request some clarity on that. Chair, the only thing that I can add to what was said, I'd followed the presentation. As I indicated yesterday, that's my understanding as well from the cursory view that I got of the bill when I read it, that the issue is the holding company that is need to comply with the requirements that's set by the Prudential Authority, and therefore the minister is in a better position to do that because there's no liquidity problem and because it's underwritten by government as such. So, Chair, that for me and the Post Office, as the Post Office of South Africa, is not a viable option because of the solvency and liquidity problems there. So, for me, the committees, and maybe it is useful for the committee to know this, that this committee, the Standing Committee on Finance, is not there to make amendments and to compile an A-list to the amendment bill that's the Communications Committee has sent to yourselves. You may make suggestions and in writing response. So it's maybe just important to note that. So if there are issues, wording that needs to be changed, all of that, we can put in a letter for the committee to approve, and then we send it to the Communications Committee Chair. But it's not that this bill is referred to the committee and the committee must report on it. Thank you, Chair. That's all I wanted to add. But the rest I understood, and I think it's in line with the memorandum to the bill and my understanding as well. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Frank. Let's now open up for members to make comments. Or before that, Chairperson Manil, do you want to make a comment before I open up for members from both committees?
No, thanks, Chair. I think from my side, there's no point to until we get comments from members. Safe to say that as members of the Portfolio Committee on Communications and Digital Technologies would have requested to meet jointly on the platform, surely they would want to make their views here. Let me just think.
Thanks, Chairperson Manil. Honorable members, there's the presentation. Are there comments? Are there clarity-seeking questions? I see there's Dr. George, Honorable Diana Kola Barnard, Dr. George, Gijimani Kasani.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. It's quite a lot to digest, given that it's come to us at this fairly late stage. But my understanding then is that the Post Bank isn't a fully fledged bank at the moment. It's owned by the Post Office. The Post Office is in very serious financial trouble, and we saw that it didn't pay the medical aid contributions for its employees that it collected from their salaries. And the perilous financial position it's in already puts 11,000 jobs at risk. So the idea, as far as I understand it, is because the Post Office is not viable enough to support it. So the bank then gets, or the limited bank as it currently stands, which is bringing some revenue to the Post Office, is then separated from the Post Office. We got a letter also recently from the Portfolio Committee on Communications to request a bailout for the Post Office. And I'm assuming then that is because it becomes even less viable if the Post Bank is then separated from it. So it certainly seems as if the Post Office will be less viable or even less viable if the Post Bank is then separated from its ownership. The bank itself also doesn't seem viable. So my question is whether there's been a feasibility study on expanding the bank in the first instance, because it's a limited function bank. So has there been a feasibility study on that? And has there been a social impact assessment then on the implications for the Post Office, given the perilous state that it's in? So I understand that the idea would be then to transfer the shareholdings from the Post Office to the government. Now that obviously is a potential liability then to the national fisc, because or to the people of the country, frankly, because there would then be another bank or state-owned enterprise that needs to be financed. So my question then there is, how is that model going to work? I mean, has the Minister of Finance indicated that he's going to give the bank money and or bail out the post office, because it certainly doesn't seem like there's any financial plan here. It was mentioned, I didn't write it down, but it was mentioned that this, the banking something, I can't remember now, it was some I think company, holding company or something, would finance the bank. But the question is, how will they do that? We didn't see a single number. We saw a few, but it certainly looked very bad. So that, I want to know if I recall correctly, the Minister of Finance said he was not going to be bailing out any more institutions. So we want to make sure what's actually going on there. And then Mr. Shilembe mentioned compensation for the post office on his last slide, but that is not final. So I don't understand how, I mean, in any business in the world, a financial transaction of this nature can happen, where you're actually pulling off a piece of it without talking about compensation, knowing what it's going to be, what does it mean then for the post office, because here is obviously a partially viable piece that's going to be taken off. And then also I noticed on the slide that there was a 3.2 billion rand that is owed to the Post Bank, if I got that right, 3.2 billion owed. I mean, how on earth does it happen? And I mean, that's a massive liability already. So it seems to me, Chair, that there is this transaction going on, but very much outside of any financial, sensible financial model. And that's very troubling, because it's going to possibly destroy both the bank and the post office. So, yeah, those are my initial comments, Chair. I really do think that this committee, our committee, the Finance Committee, should get a very much more in-depth presentation about this, and that we should actually, given that it is in fact a financial bill, we should be then getting a public participation on this. Because, I mean, every South African must be extremely worried about how our wobbly post office is going to get even more wobbly under these circumstances. Those are my first initial comments. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Dr. George. Honorable Carla Barnard.
Thank you so much, Chair. Chair, I think I must repeat that our committee, to my knowledge, has no financial expertise at all. So this is, I mean, I've pushed on numerous occasions that we come and have a joint sitting with you. You are the expert on finances. And to my eye, inexperienced in finances that I am, it is a money bill. And I think this is where it should be. So I have huge concerns that the Ministry of Communications will own a bank. This committee that I sit on will have to do oversight over a financial institution with, again, I say, zero financial expertise. We won't even know what to be looking for. In slide 7, it said that the BCC must be in a position to recapitalize the bank. Again, where is this money coming from? All I can hear is people saying no bailouts are going to be paid, no one's going to be taken and saved, as it were. And yet this entity is looking now for an open-ended, there are no figures at all. We've been given nothing. Looking to receive money should they need it. What is that? To my mind, it is a very, very strange comment to make. I mean, they will need, as we see, the post office is collapsing. So they have shut, I think it's 130 at this stage, post offices. They're calling it, apparently they're not calling it closing them, they're amalgamating them, which means they're closing one and moving it to another one. So as they collapse, so the post bank outlets are collapsing. So the post bank will have to recreate offices and branches for itself. It was told to us yesterday that they want ATMs all over. We're talking hundreds and hundreds of millions of rands of expenditure and no budgets. Now, I have been told a couple of times in our committee that has nothing to do with us. It's an operational matter. But I can't bring myself to approve of a bill where there's no money. There's nothing given in terms of a balance sheet, proposed expenditures for the future. I have a massive fear of unintended consequences. I have been involved with legislation for 18 years. We saw, for example, the DPCI legislation pushed through, ended up in court, was sent back to Parliament. It was again pushed through despite all misgivings, and it went to court and was pushed back again to Parliament. That's the sort of thing we can face. I've seen the movie before. Certainly, we don't want to be featured in Zondo Commission Part 2 at some stage. So the only thing I can see is a request to your committee to use your expertise, go through the proposed amendments, and perhaps give us a report from your perspective. I'm very sad that we didn't ask you to participate and give us inputs during the public participation process. It suddenly struck me that would have been an obvious move to make, which we did not. So asking for your expertise and looking at the proposed amendments and what you think the unintended consequences may or may not be, I think might be of enormous assistance. Certainly, the annual report for the Post Bank has been a problem. They missed the deadlines. And when they did send it, the link had expired, and we finally had it before the committee yesterday. And they too, because the post office also received one, they too have received a disclaimer, the Post Bank. And this is the second disclaimer. So the situation is catastrophic. In fact, the Auditor General representative, Mr. Skeketo, said that the Post Bank is currently in possession of a banking license and may participate in the national payment system to take deposits. But they have not implemented what the Auditor General told them to implement the previous year, which relates to sound systems of control. And they are at threat to have their license, their privileges revoked if in relation to the national payment system. So this would mean they would not be able to pay the amounts needed, such as the grant payments, which they rely on. This is teetering on the brink here, and yet there is a push to give this little bank currently far more powers, but they're not coping with the little they have at the moment. This is the problem, I think, one of the problems that we're facing. So I'd like some input there, should that happen. And of course, that brings us to the post office itself. This move would indeed be the final slitting of the throat of the post office. It's in a catastrophic state. I have called for and instituted a Hawks investigation into the fact that they are taking not only the medical aid fees, but pension, all of deductions off of staff salaries and pensioner salaries and using them elsewhere. And now the medical aid has been cut off for a second time, and I am inundated by calls from 98-year-olds and saying, what am I to do? I have no medical aid now. I need it. I worked my whole life for this institution, and I'm being cut off. Now, there was 1.4 trillion odd set aside to support pensioners in the post office, but that too seems to have evaporated. So we are in great need of your committee to advise us on this matter. I have enormous disquiet that this is even before our committee instead of yours. So I'd like input on that as well. There is nothing that convinces me that we're not going to hit the fiscus really hard should this go through. And I don't know where that money is supposed to come from. There is no indication at all in any of the paperwork that where it would come from, how we would get it, who would oversee it. And here we have a communications division running something they have no business to run and appointing people they have no business to appoint. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Kola Bonnet. Honourable Kosan.
No, ngiyathokoza, Hlalo, and greetings to all honourable members, both from the Standing Committee on Finance and from the Communication and Digital Technology Portfolio Committee, and the team from Treasury and the team from Parliament Administration and everybody in the meeting. Yeah, and I think the staff from the Department of Communication. Yeah, no, Chair, we welcome the presentation by Mr. Shelembe. At least I think now we've got a light on what is happening, and also the introduction that was made by Honorable Maneli in this particular regard. And I think as the committee, as the Standing Committee on Finance, I think we are on record for advocating for the establishment of a state bank. And I think I agree with the stakeholders who made submissions that this initiative might lead us to the realization of that goal of having a state bank. I think this might be the first step, but I think if this project succeeds, I think gradually it might lead us to us having a state bank. However, I'm also having some concerns, which I'm going to raise them in a form of questions. But part of what I wanted to raise, I think Dr. George has raised. I think due to the
recording in progress.
I think I was under the impression that what kept the post office active is the post bank. So now removing the post bank completely from the post office, it makes me wonder as to whether are we going to be able to sustain the post office? What is it that will keep the post office viable? Without the post bank, I mean, noting the financial challenges that Mr. Shelembe has highlighted, what is it that will keep the post office viable? Are we not killing the post office while we're celebrating that we are creating the post bank, but are we not, on the other hand, killing the post office? Are we not going to have a post office that is going to every year come for bailouts, being unable to pay salaries, being unable to contribute to pension funds, to medical aid, and all those things. Every year, they will have to then bail them out. I will not go. I'm asking myself. Secondly, on the post bank, the question on the post bank is the post bank going to be the entity of the Department of Communication and Digital Technology? If yes, why? Because my understanding is that the post bank is not going to offer communication services. Or digital technology services. So if it is going to be an entity of the Department of Communication and Digital Services, of which the Portfolio Committee of Communication and Digital Technology will be playing oversight on, what is the reason for it to continue then as a standalone bank to be the entity of that particular department? If it's not offering any communication services, but it's now a bank. Yeah, those are my questions, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Sir, talk about that, Charlie. Honorable Mrolo. It seems the system has kicked out Honorable Mrolo. Honorable Saruka.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, just with regards to this presentation, I think Dr. George has pointed out the big red herring in the room, and that is that we have on slide 15 that 3.2 billion rand in liabilities owed to the Post Bank. I think we need to get an understanding as to what that amount is and why this liability came from, how long this amount's been owing, et cetera.
Recording in progress.
Ran due to fraud as a consequence of these cards. How are the public supposed to, again, trust that they can safely bank with a Post Bank? These problems. The bank itself has said that its IT systems don't mirror that of a bank. It hasn't got the security to do so. And how on earth is it going to be able to actually manage all of the functions of
recording in progress.
An appropriation bill so that we get to get more details on the matter. Treasury is also obligated to shed more light on these, as it has been put, reasonable expectations by communications with respect to the NTDPS process. So I'm going to suggest that we do that, so that we engage Treasury to come and present. We've got a three-way engagement with SCOA and with the Portfolio Committee on Communication so that these details are threshed out. Thanks.
Thanks, Tate Mrolo. Any other clarity-seeking question or comment from members before we round up? Okay. Not honorable. You see, Shelemp, now I want to elevate you to be a politician. Mr. Shelemp and your team, can you please respond to issues that members have raised? Frank and members from Treasury, officials from Treasury and others, if there are issues that you want to pick up raised by members, can you please indicate? And then I will come back and see how we take the process forward. Over to you, Shalembe, first, and others will come after you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Sorry, Chair, my gadget has just been out.
Honorable Manel, over to you.
Yes, Chair, I just want to make the request. I think it's fine to get the responses, but maybe before you actually make your closure, that one comes back, maybe clarify some of the things I think if leaving this meeting not clarified. It may just be a problem. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. After the officials will have done the clarification, so you will have to come back. Then I make concluding remarks so that we move forward. Mr. Shalembe, over to you.
Thank you again, Chairperson. I am going to lump the related questions together. in my response because there is some overlap amongst some of them. But just to start off with, Honorable George indicates that Postbank isn't a fully fledged bank. And I think I just need to clarify what Postbank really is as things stand right now. Postbank is operating as a bank by way of exemption from the Banks Act, which was gazetted by the Minister of Finance. So it is allowed to take deposits from the public, which otherwise is a function reserved for banks that are licensed in terms of the Banks Act. So in that sense, it is operating as a bank. What we are trying to do now is to get it to a point where it obtains a banking license from the Prudential Authority, and that it be overseen by the Prudential Authority. There are several benefits of being overseen by the Prudential Authority. First of all, the Prudential Authority will not license Postbank if it were to deem it financially unviable to operate as a bank. And secondly, it will make sure that it monitors it on a month-to-month basis to make sure that its capital is continuously adequate to operate as a bank and that depositors' funds are continuously protected. So although it is not licensed as a commercial bank as things stand, but it is operating as a bank in terms of an exemption granted by the Minister of Finance. Then there's an assertion that SAPO will be more affected or will be less viable with this bill as we proposed it. We have been at pains, even at the Portfolio Committee on Communications and Digital Technologies, to explain that the separation or this bill is not intending to separate SAPO from the Postbank. That separation was provided for in the promulgation of the Postbank Act of 2010, and it was given effect by a minister's gazette in 1st April 2019. So the separation has long taken place. What we are doing now, we are trying to finalize the last leg of applying for a banking license for Postbank, which unfortunately, you know, although the original intention was that the post office will be the bank controlling company, but unfortunately, the amendment to the Banks Act has made that not possible to be the case. And if we were to wait for the post office to be financially viable, it would mean at least 3 years of wait before this license process can be finalized. And we think that wait will unduly affect the process of corporatization of Postbank and the extension of banking services to the unbanked and rural communities. Then there was a question about the feasibility study or the SIAS, or the socioeconomic impact analysis system. In government, when bills are being prepared for introduction to parliament, we conclude what we call the socioeconomic impact analysis system study, which was done for this bill. That study concluded also as well that this bill is only a restructuring bill, which restructures the post office out of the ownership of Postbank and instead puts in the bank controlling company, which shall be owned by the Department of Communications and Digital Technologies. So there are otherwise no other need for the feasibility study, because if that was necessary, it would have been done way back in 2010 when the Postbank was separated and established as a standalone company. Now we are not establishing the bank, it already exists. We are just finalizing the licensing process. On the question of whether government has indicated whether it will finance the bank, I think there was also another question about the BCC must recapitalize the bank and how that will happen. As things stand, Postbank is sufficiently capitalized in itself. As a result, it does not require capitalization from government to obtain the banking license. If capital adequacy ratios and other metrics are way far above that which is required by the Prudential Authority. Therefore, there is no need on the onset for the Postbank or the bank controlling company to request financing from the state in order to start the operations of the bank controlling company. And besides, the bank controlling company is not a massive structure. It is a very lean organization whose function is merely to look after its interest in a bank, make sure that risk management and compliance functions are undertaken properly, and that the bank reports properly to the Prudential Authority. So it's a very small and lean machine that just oversees the bank. Its structure will involve the board and a couple of functionaries that will assist the board of the controlling company. Chairperson, we in the department disagree with the view that this is either a money bill or an appropriation bill. There is no reference to appropriation of funds in the bill as we are proposing. There is not even a reference to or provision that the bank shall be supported by government for funding. We do not have those provisions either in the original act or in this bill. So there is nothing resembling a money bill in the bill as it stands right now. As we continue to say, this is an administrative restructuring bill, creating one company to oversee the Postbank and removing the post office altogether from being a shareholder, while the separation of the post office and Postbank had long taken place. So we also do not agree that this separation is some kind of a final straw on the back of the post office. Yes, it has financial implications to some degree, because the financials of the Postbank used to be consolidated into the financials of the post office. But these entities have been operating apart from each other for a while now. Yes, we also acknowledge the post office has its own funding requirement challenges, and we are saying let those be dealt with separately from the licensing process of the Postbank. The licensing cannot wait for the resolution or the total resolution of the problems of the post office. These things can happen simultaneously, which is why we have submitted this bill to Parliament. I think from Honorable Kosana, we are indeed comforted by the fact that Honorable Kosana acknowledges that this Postbank could serve as a springboard to a state bank. He, however, continues to say advancements in technology have affected the SAPO business. And that is also correct, which is why, in terms of the new strategy of the post office, we are acknowledging that as an economic development, which needs to be responded to by a strategy that talks to the realities on the ground. The courier business still remains a very lucrative industry in this country, yet it contributes a nominal amount to the revenues of the post office. So there is a growth area there for the post office if the strategy is properly executed. Also, the strategy of the post office talks about the creation of regional business hubs, which will essentially service businesses and communities in the form of printing, photocopying, and so on. And the strategy details as well, opportunities available in the e-commerce space, whereby the post office can, on its own and through partnerships, venture into those business undertakings. So the strategy has been presented in full to the Portfolio Committee on Communications, and I'm getting a sense that there is a wish in this committee, also in the Standing Committee on Finance, to get full sight of that and what are the possible revenues that could potentially emanate from the implementation of that strategy, provided it is a properly funded. So there was a question from, again, Honorable Skosana, that can SAPO be sustained without Postbank? And our answer is yes, on condition that the strategy is implemented to its fullest. And for it to be implemented to its fullest, it requires support from government in the form of funding. But again, to reiterate, the separation has long happened. It is not something that we are advocating for it right now through this bill. And then there is a fundamental question about whether Postbank will continue to report to the DCDT even after it has been completely separated from the post office and it has become a commercial bank. I think the minister is, our minister is on record here that our function or our role right now is to complete the task of the licensing of the bank. And that should the legislature deem it necessary, or the president deem it necessary to reallocate the oversight of the bank to another department or ministry, then that would be a decision that would be taken at that time. Again, that is not where we are right now. Then there's an issue about the technical glitches or the dysfunctional website of the Postbank. I would wish that at some point, maybe if I hear correctly, that the Standing Committee on Finance wishes to have a better insight in the operations of the Postbank. I would wish that they'll be given an opportunity to come and present to the committee in detail how they are planning to modernize their IT systems and technologies in line with the requirements of the Banks Act to become a fully fledged bank in terms of technological capabilities as well. I cannot explain the dysfunctionality of their website as of today. I think it's something they can talk to the committee about. If I were to move towards closure, again, to reiterate, this, in our view, is not an appropriation bill, nor is it a money bill. But we would welcome a three-way discussion that will include the committees mentioned here, including Treasurer. This from our side is because we have been walking this path with Treasury all the way up to where we are, which is why the bill was successfully approved in Cabinet with the support of the Minister of Finance, again, simply with the understanding of what we are trying to do with this bill. Chairperson, I hope I've touched on all the questions raised, and if I have missed one or two, maybe the members could still highlight that to me. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Shalembe. Advocate Jenkins.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to my colleagues. He's covered me to a large extent with the questions that came from the procedure that we have in Parliament. I wanted to reiterate this is not a money bill. Maybe I can add that a bill such as this cannot contain money bill provisions. An appropriation bill may only contain measures which are necessary or ancillary to the appropriation. So it's very limited. The money bill must only contain the money bill issues, as we see with the appropriation bill. So this is not. And just secondly, Chair, as said in the presentation as well as in the memorandum to the bill, that the National Treasury is still looking at the funding, and it will be provided in terms of the medium-term expenditure framework. So, Chair, on that point, it's not an answer to the question members are raising. I'm just saying to the members that that is where the answer could be found, but it is a matter that must be taken up. And maybe just to add that the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises will also have some kind of interest in this, as this is going to be a public entity, and the issues of contingent liability should those arise as well, of course, Chair. One needs to look at the Finance Committee side, but as it stands, and as the presenter said, this bill is just a separation creating a structure for the Post Bank to be able to get that license. But I want to support the members in the fact that the funding issues have not been dealt with, and it is left open in the memorandum, as it said, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks, Advocate Jenkins. Honorable Manelli, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Maybe most of the points have now been clarified, but I just thought it's important to make this distinction again. That first, it's two items combined into one because of the link. Otherwise, as the point raised by Honorable Morolong, is that the part that relates to SAP and the agent intervention, I will take it to be the matter indeed that needs also the appropriations to deal with this, and I will take that away to be in the main about that. And taking his word there, that probably even the reason to write on that matter in particular is what we would call the expectation. And this expectation would have also been made in public in the sense that when SAPO appeared before the committee led by the ministry, there was this understanding that out of the cabinet processes, including the budget processes, there was an expectation for such an announcement when the minister was delivering the medium-term budget policy statement, which then did not happen. And the crisis that it creates for SAPO, as you would have seen in the presentation, what they would need to get up to the end of the financial year and what then happens post that period. So it's quite an urgent matter. And that is really separate from a discussion of whether you'd want to still propose another legislation to incorporate the Post Bank back to SAPO and so on, which will be a process of its own. So I just thought it's important to make that distinction so that this matter of the intervention in SAPO does not take a back stand as though it's dependent on the approval of this amendment bill, which is about just a structure in the Post Bank. The other point, really, Chair, is this understanding that the matter has been referred to the Committee on Communications and Digital Technologies because it is currently the Portfolio Committee where that entity reports, and it has been reporting initially together with SAPO, and there's been this separation over time. This separation came before we even came in this administration. So it's important to make that point. But also not to forget history, that necessarily this has been a bank created long time ago, and there have been improvements that get made in the process of ensuring that it stays like that. So that it's understood that creating this fully fledged bank is on the basis of an existing bank that has been there with particular functions. And that function is not just about getting the decision when it was taken to have the grants issued by the bank, but the bank has been having depositors from communities. And in all these problems that have been raised, at least from a presentation that the committee saw yesterday, that aspect has not been affected by these problems. And I'm talking to the trust of communities in terms of the post-bank itself. So I'm just saying it's important to make all these points as you will be concluding in any way in terms of responding. And the post-bank yesterday made it clear that for them to reach the goals that they've set for themselves, this part about the license gets important so that they are able to do other things, including this modernization of the ICT as they operate on a flat system that you have on the IT with SAPO. And then in that score, they can deal with some of the breaches that have led to the losses that honourable member would have made as an input here. So I thought it's important, and I want to agree that probably the standing committee may want to consider inviting these entities in the interest of knowing better details as to the operations and so on. I think we should welcome that. But that having been said, it does not remove the obligation given to the committee as by the ATC to engage this matter. And in engaging it, I want to stress, we have gone through the public participation process as required. And we have got responses from the public participation process. And I'm sure at the time of discussion, you may want to say what you want to ascertain in your process if you were to go another public participation process on these amendments, because we're dealing with specific amendments, which are about the structure. I thought it's important to make that point, and I've made the point earlier that we did not only write to yourselves as people who deal with framing of the budget, the legislation and so on, but we've also written directly also to appropriations, understanding that once we talk to financing, it is indeed an appropriation matter, as Honorable Morlo would have said. I submit, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson Honorable Mane. The department initiated a bill through the minister, as it is a competence. And as it is required, I think the bill has gone through all the processes of the executive, and amongst other necessary requirements is that there should be SEERs. And I hear Mr. Shelembe saying that SEERs has been conducted. Once the SEERs had been conducted, the minister takes the bill through the necessary committee. I'm not sure how committees are now clustered in cabinet, but I think communications might be under the economic cluster. I'm not sure. I'm not saying that. And if the economic cluster has satisfied itself that the bill meets requirements as it has been drafted by the state law drafters, then the bill goes to cabinet. Then from there, the deputy president as the leader of government business brings government business to the speaker, who is the executive authority of the National Assembly, and outline the business from the executive. And amongst other that will be bills that are coming from the executive. From there, the speaker, once the minister tables the bill, the speaker refers the bill to a specific committee that is responsible for that competence or for that portfolio. And in this regard, the speaker, who is the executive authority, has referred this bill to the portfolio committee, communications and digital technologies. So it is the responsibility of the said committee to process the bill. If in between the committee feels that it has to consult other committees, conduct public participation, that is their decision. But the bill, the committee has got no powers to further refer the bill to another committee of parliament. We as chairpersons, we don't have those powers. The powers rest with the speaker. And in this regard, the speaker has referred the bill to this committee. The committee has satisfied all the processes, including public participation. So, because you have got no powers to further the bill to another committee, there is no way in which we can start afresh as SCOF to process this bill. Because the bill has been referred to our committee by the speaker. We'll be assuming powers that we don't have as chairpersons and as the members of parliament. And the speaker will have an issue with us as to what is it that we are doing. From there, if the committee has conducted public hearings and the public has made submissions, it means what we have to do is to compile the report from the public hearings and the input of the members. Go through that report as the committee, adopt or reject the report. If the report is so adopted, it means it will go to the next stage of being ATC'd and taken to the National Assembly. I hear the members raising concern about the viability of the bank. It is upon the prudential authority to make sure that before it issues out the license, it is convinced that the bank is going to be viable. And once it is convinced that the bank will be viable, it will still issue the license or decline the application. In this regard, if members are doubtful that the bank is going to be viable, what you might have to do before you take the report to the National Assembly is to invite the minister, who is the shareholder, and her team to come to the committee and outline the business model that the bank is going to follow, including the governance issues. I had Shelembe asking questions, who will appoint the CEO. If this is an SOE, it is clear in terms of the law that the minister is a shareholder and the minister will have to be involved in one way or another in the appointment of the board and the CEO. Why is the CEO supposed, the minister supposed to come on board? It's because the CEO is also a member of the board. That's how the minister comes in. On all other issues, I don't have to get involved there. But governance is clearly outlined that the minister is the shareholder and the board is what we call an accounting authority. And it is clear in terms of the PFMA, what are the responsibilities of the accounting authority. So it is upon the Minister of Communications and Digital Technologies to come to the board, I mean to the committee, and explain how the governance of the bank and the business model that is going to follow will go about. At this stage, what I understand is that this competence is allocated to the minister by the president. So if ourselves, we want to get responsible, even as this committee, we'll be overreaching and it will not be proper because there's separation of powers. In regard to the allocation, if there are finance related matters, it is the responsibility of appropriations committee to do bailout and do all those. This committee is responsible for the fiscal framework. This committee of finance will come in at a later stage when the license will have been issued or is issued. We will come in when it comes to oversight, because we are assisted to play oversight on the financial sector through the Prudential Authority, FSCA, and FIC. For now, we don't have a role in processing this bill. The Communications and Digital Technologies Portfolio Committee should process this bill to finality. And us will only come in when it comes to oversight on the financial sector, as it is our responsibility. So that's how we are supposed to process this matter. Honorable Chairperson, Comrade Manel, that proceed with processing this bill. Will not come in. We can't conduct another public hearing because the bill hasn't been referred to us by the Speaker. It has been referred to you, and you have got all those powers to make sure that you process the bill to finality. On bailing out the post office, you have to go to appropriations, because appropriations committee is responsible for the division of revenue. We don't get into division of revenue as the SCOF. We only deal with a fiscal framework related matters and play oversight on national treasury and entities that report to treasury. Lastly, why do you find the land bank being under treasury? The land bank was not under treasury before. It was under the Department of Land Affairs and Rural Development by then. However, because of other challenges, at that time, the president decided to transfer the land bank to national treasury. And that is done through a proclamation. So it is not like automatically, once there is a state bank, that bank will fall under national treasury. No, land bank was under the Minister of Land Affairs. But because of the challenges that were there at the time, the president decided to transfer the bank to national treasury through a proclamation. So it's not the case that other departments can't own or be responsible for a financial institution. If the president has so decided that this competency falls under the Minister of Digital Technologies, let's respect that, because it's an executive competency of the president. Thanks very much, honorable members, officials from the department and parliament, honorable Manel and colleagues from Digital Technologies and SCOF. The meeting is adjourned. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Enkosi.
Enkosi Masengwane.
Thank you very much. Oh, and the
corner. Recording stopped.
Hey, Masongane.
Hello.
Hey, man, yeah, your summary makes me feel happy.
Thanks very much.
Shut up.
Ciao, ciao.